Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Hazmat Guys. I'm Michael Monaco. Today we're doing a great hot wash. I've got a guest, a fellow IAFF instructor with me. His name is Russ. He's going to pronounce his last name because I seem to not be able to. Russ is from...
Milwaukee.
Russ is from Milwaukee. The cool part about Milwaukee is that unlike New York, they're an extremely industrial city. So he actually has a whole bunch of things that he's done that we've never even come close to. So I'm sure you're going to be hearing quite a bit of stories from Russ as time goes on. I'll let him introduce himself then, and then he's got a couple that he wants to get off of his chest right away. So tell us a little something about yourself. First, start with your last name.
All right, Mike, thanks. My name is Russ Brevard. I'm with the Milwaukee Fire Department. That's Local 215. I've been on the Milwaukee Fire Department for 23 years, and I'm the current director of our regional hazmat team. In Wisconsin, it's a little bit different than here in New York. We not only take care of the city of Milwaukee, but we take care of the five surrounding counties of Milwaukee, and we're the only tier one team. So basically, we cover half of the state.
Wow.
Yeah, so we do get a chance once in a while to see some unique things. We have a very industrial city, and the counties that we provide protection to are very agricultural. So we run everything from pesticides to fertilizers and fumigants. It runs the gamut.
Everything. You get a little bit of everything.
You sure do.
So the story that he's going to tell us, he has told me before, so I will try to act surprised when I hear something, but it's really interesting the runs that they have. He's told me a few stories. This one starts off with just a regular fire, right?
Right. We have major interstate that comes into our town from Chicago. It was a Friday night, and if you're not familiar with Wisconsin, it gets invaded by Illinois people every Friday heading to their cottages in our beautiful North Woods. So this particular Friday night on Interstate 94, we had a semi-trailer that was northbound coming into our exchange system. If you're familiar with the area, it's right outside of our airport, and they're going to take the bypass around the city. Well, prior to this event happening, there was really no markings on this bypass, and this 18-wheeler took the turn a little fast and ended up putting it into the guardrail. When he put his tractor trailer into the guardrail, it proceeded to catch fire, and the cab itself was on fire. The driver was not hurt. He exited the vehicle, called 911. Well, you can picture the scene. The highway is now basically come to a standstill because there's a semi that's burning. In the city of Milwaukee, our protocol is to send a full assignment to a situation like that, and that consists of three engines, three trucks, two battalion chiefs, a paramedic unit, and a safety officer.
Now, this is at night, right?
It is just as the sun's starting to go down on a Friday evening, so just after supper time, 5 o'clock, something like that. Well, the rigs are starting to respond. Now, it's on an exchange system where there's no hydrants, and we are a very hydrant-based fire department.
As are we.
We have Lake Michigan at our disposal, and there's a hydrant on every corner and one in every middle of the block. So in this situation, water was kind of a problem. All our engines carry 500 gallons, but it was in kind of a precarious spot. So the engines are arriving. They're thinking about applying foam.
Now, what do they see? What kind of truck does it look like from their very first response?
Well, it's not a pressurized. It's a low-pressure tank, and it's dual circumferential. What that means is both sides have, the ends of the tanker have a skinnier circumference, and then as it comes to the middle, it widens out. So gravity lets everything flow out of the bottom, and okay. You can assist it with a little air pressure.
So almost like a bulk container, but meant more for like a liquid.
Correct.
And what part was on fire?
Well, the semi-tractor itself was on fire, and it was impinging on the tank above the fifth wheel.
Okay.
So the initial operation was to put a little foam on it. The first battalion chief gets on scene, and he knows the area, and he's water's a concern. Being that the airport was right there, Mike, he called for the crash fire rescue truck just because of the amount of water and the foam that they carry, and they are right there. I mean, literally, you look at the airport from this exchange. Right.
And if anybody has a huge supply of foam and resources to put out a fire like this, it's going to be the airports.
And you know those guys. It's not like they get airplanes crashing all the time where they get some work.
Hopefully not.
So they are pretty excited that they actually get to do their thing. Well, being that it was a semi, the chief on scene decided to call for a hazmat response. So we're centrally located in the city, and we happen to be coming around the bypass from the opposite side. So as we're approaching this vehicle, we're coming from a different direction than all the other first-in companies were. When we could get a good look at it, we stopped and we pulled out the binoculars, and all I could make out on the placard was that it was orange.
So there was an orange placard on this truck that looks like it's designed to carry liquids.
Correct.
Okay.
We have some companies that are pretty close to it. I immediately notified the battalion chief that hazmat was on scene, that we were close enough by to see it, and I thought I better let him know that it was placarded with an explosive placard.
Yeah, what's your first, like, you're looking through the binoculars, I would imagine the last thing you ever expected to see was an orange placard on the side of this truck.
If I use the term pucker factor, Mike, do you
understand? Yeah, I definitely can understand the pucker factor.
The pucker factor was up pretty high because these are all my friends that are that close to this container that carries an explosive that is on fire.
And now keep in mind, you're looking at this container that is clearly designed for liquids. So we know that these types of containers generally carry one type of product and one type of product only. You're not looking at a box truck where it could have a couple of ounces of the explosives and therefore has to be placarded under the table one, but you're looking at this knowing that the entire truck is filled with explosives. That's kind of what's running through your mind when you're seeing this
Correct.
Giant truck placarded for, right?
Correct. So being that I'm pretty good friends with that battalion chief, on a personal note, I let them know that we were on scene, and basically my words were, Battalion 4, be advised that that truck is labeled with a orange placard. That's an explosive placard.
Oh, man.
So immediately the airwaves went kind of silent, and
I imagine they would be.
Battalion came back and said, Hazmat, where are you going to stage? And I told him that we were going to go a half a mile south on the interstate, and we were going to park underneath an overpass. So immediately the call went out that all companies should back up at least a half a mile per hazmat, and we were going to figure it out from there. So that's what we did. Everyone backed up. We got a hold of the driver. He was not hurt, but his pucker factor, I think, was higher than mine. He was pretty shook up.
Because he knew what he had.
It was hard to get a good answer out of him. But what we got was the shipping papers and the safety data sheet.
Okay.
Well, I guess here's the point that I'm going to try to make out of this whole story. I went around with our whole crew, who were all hazmat technicians, asking everyone, what do you know about explosives? What do you know about explosives? And I got the blank stare from all of them.
Right.
So that didn't help the pucker factor at all.
I know I don't want to go up there.
And now's not the time to make a wag. So we're trying to figure out what to do scientifically. So what we did is we turned to the 24-hour 1-800 number on the shipping papers, and we actually called the manufacturing company that makes this stuff.
Great heads-up move.
And that was kind of a funny story because we called them, and the first phone call, I got some secretary, and I introduced myself, told her who I was, what my situation was, and her exact words were, hold, please. And I'm thinking, hold, please, you got to be kidding me.
Right.
Well, someone answers again, and the second time, same story, and I get hold please again. Well, now I'm, you know, starting to get a little irritated, to say the least. Third call, or the third person I talked to, ends up to be the president of the company, and he had his head chemist in the on a conference call. So it went something like this. I introduced myself. I said I was with the Milwaukee Hazmat. You have one of your semi-trailers that was heading northbound towards Green Bay, and it hit a wall, and the tractor is on fire. Right there, some voice in the background stopped me and said, on fire? And I was like, kind of sarcastically, yeah, for the third time I'm telling you people, on fire. His immediate response was, well, how close are you? And I said, well, we're approximately a half mile away, and we're under the cover of an overpass. He immediately went to say, oh, you're too close. You need to be back at least a mile. Well, that added some issues, because once you draw a circle in a mile around that, that included some residential areas, and that basically shut down the whole interstate.
The whole, everything's clogged.
Everything is shut down.
And everybody's got to be evacuated a mile.
So we had went from an offensive, you know, tactics where those first companies were going to foam it and put it out, to a total non-intervention issue, backing up a mile. Basically, we sat there. Well, it turned out all right. All the flammables on the tractor, the tires, the fuel, all the hoses, any piece of rubber, basically burned up, and nothing happened. We had the freeway shut down for probably 14 hours by the time we could get it offloaded and transferred, and it ended up being a product very similar to ANFO. It looked like a consistency of Elmer's glue. It was a thick, white, viscous liquid, and how they used it is they used it in quarries. They would drill holes down in the quarry, pump this stuff in there, use a blasting cap to detonate it. Well, we aren't, Mike, we're not explosive experts.
No,
you know? I know. And the couple biggest takeaways that we took out of this run were, number one, when in doubt and you have no clue what you're dealing with, that material safety data sheet with that 1-800 number is really takes the monkey off your back. We called them. We were using their direction. When it comes down to liability, it falls on them, not on us, which right. was fantastic, because we really didn't know how to predict what was going to happen. Our we're really good with our chemical and physical properties, but the explosives thing was right. you know, not in our wheelhouse.
Any idea how come this didn't detonate?
Well, after the fact, you know, like any call that we all go on, you should learn from every call. So we started asking around, and we had a couple experts that came in. We started working closely with our bomb squads in town, and he kind of described it like, if you blow up a balloon and you tie it shut and you hold a lighter to it, the rubber fails from the heat of the lighter and it pops. And the way he described it was, if you take that same balloon and you fill it with water and you hold a lighter to it, you have to heat the water up to get it to a temperature where the container is going to fail. So even though there was fire impinging on the end of the container, it wasn't heating it up enough the whole way to get this stuff to auto-ignite. Now, it was a valuable lesson, and we learned it. The bottom line, even knowing that now, we would still do the same thing.
Yeah, I think we'd do the exact same thing.
There was nothing to gain by trying to risk to put the fire out.
Right, and so that risk-reward-benefit balance that you looked at, you sat and you said, well, there's no reason to do an offensive operation, so we're going to just stay as far back as possible and just let the scene work itself out, and we'll deal with ever the repercussions of it either exploding or fizzing off to nothing.
Correct. One of the other aspects of this run that was really kind of interesting, being that it was right by the airport and it was getting so much press, it was a while ago. It was in the early days of cell phones. There was so many people that were stuck on the freeway using their cell phones that our hazmat team had a problem getting a line to get out, to even talk to the people.
Okay.
Another issue that we faced was the news helicopters. You know, it's live local 8 breaking. They are on the scene and they are hovering right above this container that we have backed out a mile around, but they are not a mile over the top of it.
Right. They're a few thousand feet.
And few hundred feet. Even closer, right. So that was a concern. That was really kind of funny, because one of the orders was to call the airport. We called the airport. We got the number to the terminal. The cool thing was they were watching us, because we were right there by the airport. They're like, yeah, we're watching you do this. So we were like, hey, can you secure the airspace? It's pretty funny, because we're not air traffic controllers either. So the direct quote was, well, how high do you want to secure it? And the guy that was on the phone, he's like, to the moon, man. I don't know. So anyway, we just wanted it secured so the helicopters would leave. You know, they weren't diverting traffic or anything. We just, you have to look not only linear, but you have to look, there's six sides to a run.
So. Right, right. All over the place, all over the place.
Right.
How did you feel to fight that urge to do something?
There's certain times, I think, where you just know doing nothing was the right was the right
and
thing.
And was everybody from the top of the command down okay with that? Or did you meet any kind of friction where, what do you mean we're just going to stand around and watch this thing burn?
Fire department was totally on board. The sheriff's department, they were not happy that the interstate was closed down for 14 hours. Because I'm telling you, a ton of people are using that on a Friday to go to their cottages on the weekends.
Obviously, it didn't detonate.
Correct.
So at some point, the fire goes out. What is the next train of thought? Where do you start to get to the point that obviously we can't leave this isolated forever? At some point, something's got to be done. When do you start making the push to go forward? How did you determine that it was safe to even take one step forward? What was your thought process from the moment that the fire went out to the time you made contact with the actual vessel?
Well, we were on scene for probably 14, 15 hours. Even as we were watching it burn, we were coming up with a contingency on how to transfer the product. In the city, there was plenty of other containers that were identical to this, but the company said, if you use it, you're going to buy it unless you can guarantee you get all that product out of there. And we couldn't guarantee that.
Okay.
So we went right to the manufacturer, which was in Indiana, and they dispatched a truck with another trailer to use to transfer the product.
Okay.
So even though it took, 14 hours that we had the freeway down, that gave them time to get there with their container. Once it was out, we assisted a private contractor in transferring the product over. Once it was transferred over, they just kind of picked up the burn pile of rubble and we opened the freeway. And it was funny because right after that happened, they painted all these crazy lines on the road to help you slow down so this wouldn't happen again.
Were there any tools, any meters, anything used as you're approaching to say, as we're getting closer, that it's still safe, I'm not worried about something detonating ahead of time? Or were you guys told once the fire's out, it's completely safe, there's nothing to worry about?
That's correct. To detonate it once it didn't lose its stability by heating up, if that's what you're asking.
Yes.
And we didn't have that problem. The company that sent their truck, the driver, he was well-versed with the product. We always ground and bond when we transfer anyway. We were just basically taking his lead, but we didn't really need to monitor or meter anything. Anytime we transfer, we lay a line for precautionary reasons, but besides that, really nothing else.
All right, great. That sounds like a very interesting run, that's for sure.
It's one I'll never forget, and it's a pretty fun story to tell sometimes.
That is very cool. Well, thank you very much for your time. Russ is here. He's in New York this week teaching with the IAFF. He's a master instructor as well. Hopefully, throughout the years, we'll be able to get more stories from him. He comes from an area that has a lot to offer, so we hope to be able to share stories. If you have any questions for Russ, feel free to email me at mike@thehazmatguys. I'll forward everything to him. All right, guys, if you come across something, if you have something, if you want to share your story on the hot wash, you have something that happened that you feel people can learn from, we're always looking for stories to air. So, Russ, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you guys next time on the hot wash.